You're listening to Dotto Tech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Hello and welcome to Dotto Tech. I am Steve Dotto and I am ever so glad that you are joining us this fine Wednesday here in January 2013. Art Factora, how are you, sir?
I am feeling weak and a little tired.
Did you get the flu?
No, I'm starting a cleanse, a 30-day cleanse.
Oh, shut up.
No, really? This is my resolution. I don't know why. Every year I think I'm going to lose weight and get healthier.
Are you one of those guys that does, like, I've seen these things on the internet where they take pictures as they're cleansing themselves. You're not going to be doing that, are you?
No, you won't see any shirtless photos of me.
I'm not thinking shirts. I'm thinking, you know, output.
I'm going to catalog. I took a measure of all my important parts of my body so I can see how many inches are gone.
Thank goodness we're on radio. Ask me what's on the show today.
Steve?
Yes?
What's on the show today?
We've got a fascinating and eclectic mix on the show today.
Oh, you just wanted to use the word eclectic.
No, I didn't. I'm happy with it. We are going to be talking about genealogy. Ancestry.ca is a guest. We're going to be talking the paperless office, the paperless life. Can we get to a paperless life? And I've also got an interview with she's in Mexico. I can't believe she's in Mexico. But we're going to be talking about writing, if you want to be a writer. Writing coaching. So see, when I said eclectic, I meant eclectic.
That really is, that's spanning the spectrums.
Yeah. I have to ask you about the cleanse. Are you just drinking broth? Were you inspired? by protests?
Another host on the show, Beverly Pomeroy, who one of your neighbors.
Yeah, I know Beverly.
She told me about something that she was doing.
The backyard philanthropist.
Yes. She's doing these shake things, and I thought, you know what? The last couple of years, things have just been let go. I just haven't really cared about too much physically. So I thought, you know, if I do 1 month, I can erase the last couple of years of bad.
So you're trying for a shortcut. Are you exercising while you do it? Because you know what PJ Wren would say.
Yes, I know. No, I've been trying to get more active, which has been difficult.
So does that mean that you can't even stand up to change the channel on the TV anymore, can you? That's not like an option for us.
This is your fault. You're the one who showed me all of these wonderful gadgets.
No, but I'm just trying to think, if I wanted to change the channel on my TV by using the TV, I don't know where the buttons are on the TV to change the channel if I wanted to get up off the couch.
I've now got apps on my iPad and my iPhone for TELUS TV with the Optic TV where I can change the channel with those.
So you're going to be drinking shakes for the next 30 days. That's it.
30 days.
No solid food.
No. It's a reasonable meal once a day. So two shakes a day and a reasonable meal.
So you're really not all that weak.
It's not easy.
Oh, geez.
You should have seen my. I should have seen my plate before.
I think we better get on with it. Joining me online now, we have Leslie Anderson, who is with Ancestry.ca. They are the website that's all about family trees. They've got a relationship with Libraries and Archives Canada to help us find all of the different records and give us tools to help us build family trees. And genealogy just seems to be it's a going concern, isn't it, Leslie?
That's right. A lot of people are addicted to this hobby.
And now, you guys have really fleshed out your site. It's been a while since I looked at the genealogy software. I think back when we did the TV show, we did several episodes on it because it was so popular. I think it was the big hit just before scrapbooking became a big hit.
I think you're right, yes.
But I remember there used to be a tool called Family Tree Maker, which we looked at. It was all about doing the research and building that family tree and then uploading it to the web and then having it mixed with other people's family trees and pull everything together. It's still really the same basic process as it was even 10 years ago, isn't it?
It is. We have more than 41 million family trees online now and about 2 million paying subscribers for our services. We really are the one-stop shop for doing genealogy. We still have Family Tree Maker, so a lot of people are utilizing that at home, are downloading that to their computers at home, and syncing it with their online tree, which of course would be available wherever they are.
Because I think that's one thing that's important to point out is there is the genealogy world has a standard database format that if the information is formatted correctly, it can then be mixed and melded with other databases, which just adds to the value so much.
Yeah, there is a common format, but as well, if you start your family tree online, you don't need to worry about formats. You can download it to a family tree program at a later time, and we have that on site, like, to help you do that. But you can either start online or you can start on your computer and then go online. So I think Family Tree Maker 2012 is just excellent. It does the syncing, so anything you add online comes down to your computer,
okay,
and anything you have on your computer goes back up online.
Now, it used to be a little bit of a daunting process getting involved in genealogy, where you had to, I guess back in the day, people used to go down to city halls and in records departments and look stuff up. But even when we started, you know, finding all of the records and knowing what databases to go in and search, it was a very labor-intensive process. But you folks now seem to have really automated it a lot.
Exactly. It really is. I'm jealous, as a matter of fact, because I've been researching my own tree for over 35 years. And as you say, it costs a lot of money, a lot of time. You have to know what you're doing. But our focus is really to make this easy as possible. What we do is provide a one-stop shop for you to go up and search for an interesting name or an ancestor's name or an uncle's name or whatever. And we would be able to present all of the historical documents and indexes that name and place and date appears in, and you can actually view the historical document that it appears in.
And that is, of course, the big payoff is looking at them. I can remember back when Libraries and Archives first started digitizing the enrollment papers for the Canadian soldiers from the First World War.
Oh, right.
I can remember what an emotional experience it was looking up my grandfather's and my uncle's in enlistment papers and reading in their own handwriting back from the turn of the century days of them enrolling and to go off to war. It was a tremendously emotional experience seeing those digitized documents.
And we have those attestation or sign up papers on ancestry.ca, and as you say, it is emotional when you see what your ancestor might look like. It has their physical description. It'll have some connection to another family member by their next of kin, what occupation they had,
their penmanship. Just seeing their penmanship, which you might remember from being a child on a birthday card or something like
that.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And you're really getting to know them through the documents.
Yeah.
And you're right, it is very important. That's our value of our site, is being able to easily find a connection in the historical documents, and we through our membership or through our paying subscribers can get all of the historical records from around the world at just the click of a button.
And then once you've found those documents, you can attach them to the family tree, so anybody you share it with can see those documents at any point.
That's right. Your family tree is totally free to do. Anybody can go and do that, whether you're a member or not. We're going to ask you to set up a username and a password, but it's entirely yours to scan in your own documents and to invite people to come and help you build your family tree. But you're right, the value add of Ancestry is if you do a search on Ancestry and you find these historical records that we've digitized and work with archives and government repositories to be able to give you those historical documents, you can easily attach those to the family tree and build your family tree.
And then it becomes a rich multimedia environment. Now, when I first visited your site, I just went in, and when you first visited, it prompts you to start setting up a family tree if you haven't done one. I entered my name, my father's name, my grandfather's name and grandmother's name, his siblings' names, and where we were from. And on the very next screen, it already had dates of death. It had sourced a fairly extensive amount of information, the year that they came to Canada. I could scroll through, and I could quickly see that there was similar records that I could verify of their transit across the Atlantic and landing in New York. So it's extending well beyond just Canada into the U.S. records right away almost.
Exactly. It's amazing how easy it is. And you have to verify the information, but you were right to put in as much information as possible, gather what you can from your family stories. And this is a great time of year to do, make your New Year's resolution to go and chat with, you know, Auntie M and yeah. Grandma Smith and stuff like that, and get that information, put it in the family tree, and Ancestry does the searching for you. So even if you're not really good at, you know, searching and computers and all that jazz, basically you punch in your names and we present the information to you based on the common information that you've put in. We also offer hints. So
yeah.
Once your family tree is up online and you go to sleep at night, we search the billions of records that we have. We've got more than 2 billion records. And we search those and we say, hey, this matches something that's in your family tree. And we identify that with a little shaky leaf. Mm-hmm. And you go and check out those historical records. And if it's yours, if it belongs in your family tree, then you can easily attach that by saving it to your family tree.
Will that build new branches for us automatically?
Yes, it actually pulls the family information or whatever information. Let's say it's a census record. A census record asks a lot of information. That's a document that will have family groups. It'll have mom, dad. It'll have visitors. It'll have the relationship to the head of the household, how, you know, what his occupation was. And that information will be pulled out of the historical document so you don't have to type it yourself.
Now, does it also connect to other people's family trees that they've built?
Exactly. That is, I think that's the biggest value of coming on to Ancestry, because, again, it's free to put up your family tree, so a lot of people are doing it. 41 million family trees are up on Ancestry. And, again, instead of once you put up your family tree and you get that hint, it isn't just to historical documents, it's actually to other people's family trees. And I have met, I teach genealogy classes too, and myself, I have met internet cousins that I had no idea existed
yeah.
in branches of the family that I had no idea where they were or where they went. So it is a way to, it's an anonymous connection. You can see their family tree if they've made it public. You can have private family trees as well.
Okay.
But you are always able to, if they, the majority of us want to connect, and so you are always able to connect through an anonymous username service that we have, and you have your own private inbox, and that's how you can communicate with people.
Now, I think one of the keys to it is at least in this day and age, is immediate success. There is a lot of instant gratification to doing this process. If you spend as little as 10 or 15 minutes, you're going to have some results and some success right away. And I think that's a huge leap forward over the way it used to be.
Yes, exactly. I also know in my own research, I want to connect with people that might have a photograph or might have more information, especially photographs and family Bibles and things like mm-hmm. that. And they're also looking to me to provide information to help them understand, you know, their family's trees. And so having Ancestry here to facilitate that so easily is just wonderful in this day and age. And now you can even get it on your iPad or your iPod and
yeah.
and your Android, and you can carry what I used to carry, binders and binders of information with me when I did my research, even in the libraries and the archives. And now I can take a family trip or do a trip in England and have everything available.
Just call it up on the computer. Now, let's talk a little bit about the media, because that really is something that allows you to enrich. So you can add photos, you can add those documents, you can add videos, you can add whatever media you have, be it scanned, be it something you find on the internet, you can add all of that to the records as well.
That's right. Every family member in your family tree has a profile. So it'll have who they married and who their kids were and what their timeline is and what the events were in their lives. But you also have the facility to upload pictures, records, even videos and mm-hmm. taped recordings, notes. You can add notes and letters, take pictures of letters, and everything is in one place, very well organized. And again, whatever you do online, if you've purchased Family Tree Maker computer program, whatever's online will be downloaded to your program, and whatever you've done at home in your program will be uploaded. And same with the smartphones, they work the same way. So you can sync up with your smartphone as well.
Now, as far as the video and that stuff goes, like I did a memorial video for my father. Now, I can post that on YouTube, but quite often people use music. That's not. They right. add music and YouTube blocks it. So you can actually upload the video yourself and you guys will store the video for them.
That's right. And we are a backup copy of all of your family tree. So if you ever, God forbid, have an accident or a fire or whatever, everything that you've scanned in or every video that you've taken or a recording or whatever that you've put up online and attached it to a profile is a backup copy.
Great. Now, we've talked about all the things that it does, but we haven't talked about how much it costs.
Well, there is a cost. I always recommend to people to try it out for free. So go up to the country site that you're interested in Canada, it's .ca, ancestry.ca. Try our 2-week free trial. If you are hooked and you want to carry on, we do offer 2 membership types. You can either stay on just with Canadian Records, or you can choose the World Deluxe version. And the World Deluxe, of course, will bring in American records, as a lot of us have ancestors that migrated up from the States.
Yes, so many came in through New York, yeah.
Down to the States. A lot came from England. So the World Deluxe really makes sense, and I believe it's very affordable at about $25 a month if you purchase a year package.
Okay.
If you just want a month's package, though, it's a little bit higher than that for the world.
Okay.
But generally, you're looking at about $12 a month, $13 a month for Canadian Records. And that's a couple of Starbucks coffees to be able to access and utilize all of this historical, original digitized data without ever leaving your chair is just worth that.
And as Libraries and Archives adds more, they are busy scanning in every document that they can get their hands on. And as they scan in more, you all automatically get access to any new data and new information that's being digitized.
Well, actually, we partner with Archives. And so Archives and government places and genealogy societies and historical societies that have the data, we go out and partner with them, and we actually digitize those records for them.
Okay.
So that we provide them back with a copy for their use as well. So it truly is a really great partnership in order to access these records that people might not even be aware of that were in those repositories. So as we work on our partnerships and as we expand those partnerships, the more and more genealogy material will come up online.
The last thing I have to ask you about is how does it work in the social media world where we have things like Facebook now, which people are using to connect so often.
That's
and
right.
This seems to be a natural for people talking to other people and sharing information back and forth. Do you folks facilitate a forums and so people communicate, or how do people tend to talk to each other?
Yeah, definitely. Each country site has a Facebook app, Facebook presence. And so if you are on Facebook and you're interested in joining, definitely I would say look us up on ancestry.com, ancestry.ca. We have blogs. We also have magazines and articles online and our help. But definitely the best and easiest way is to get connected by going to Ancestry and getting your tree up online.
The only piece of advice I will give is make sure that you don't have anything planned for the next few days or weeks if you start. Because when you start playing with it, it is addictive in a different way, because it doesn't feel bad addictive. It feels it's a very enriching process. I have to say that
it is, and I always think it's a way to honor our ancestors. And if not for them, we wouldn't be here. And I think in this crazy world we live in, that You know, it just connects us. It connects us to our ancestors, but also to each other in this big world of family trees.
It gives us a better feeling of where we're going if we know where we've been.
Yeah.
There we go. Leslie Anderson is with a with Ancestry.ca. You can certainly find them, obviously, at Ancestry.ca. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Happy hunting.
Thank you. I'm Steve Dotto, and you're tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dotto Tech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
At various times in my life, I have been literally buried in paper. My desk, an avalanche hazard, I believe. They had the guys with the mortars dropping shells and making it slide to make it safe. Brooks Duncan joins me, and he, I guess you help people dig out from underneath that mountain of paper using technology. You're all about the paperless office, which we've been promising for ever so long. Is it finally here?
Well, we're closer than we've ever been able to be before, let's put it that way.
Now, your company, you have a website, and your website is called Document Snap.
That's right.
And you also work as a consultant, basically helping every size business become paperless?
Yeah. Well, mainly I focus on individuals and small businesses, but there's a range for sure.
Yeah, and now in the top end of this whole game, I've seen the stuff like Xerox's documents or Docutech systems, which are just amazing large systems. But a lot of those tools have kind of come downstream now to the end users. And I've played with a few different systems. I'm having moderate success. I'd like to have more success. Maybe after this interview today, I'll be able to do a little bit better. But what is reasonable expectations for the amount of paper that we should be able to move into a digital form?
More than you might think. You really want to focus on removing the paper that's coming into your life first, looking at the inputs and seeing what you can cut out at the beginning. So
things like dealing with the e-post service, that you can get all of your credit card bills, your statements from the bank, making sure those all come in digital form first.
Yeah, and a lot of the junk mail that comes in, you can get rid of that, put yourself on the list to get off of those, or contact the companies. A little bit of work at the beginning can really pay off later. Mm-hmm. And funnily enough, a lot of the paper we generate ourselves. So it's just kind of recognizing your behavior, maybe not hitting that print button that you might otherwise do and stuff like that.
I think my biggest issue is paper that comes in by the mail. So let's first of all talk about what you can do. So a lot of people don't know, I guess, or haven't given some thought. But with almost all of your utility bills, with all of your credit card bills, with your cell phone bill, even your communication, I think with most municipalities, you can opt to go paperless with all those so that they just email you PDF documents of all of your statements and bills.
Absolutely. You can either do it with a lot of these organizations individually, or Canada Post has its e-post thing where a lot of these things can be routed through and then you can just download the PDF. Yeah.
Okay, so the first question that I have for you is organizational. Yes. Let's say that we've done that. I've increasingly seen people use their email as their filing system on their computer. And I have to think that if you move to a paperless system where all of your utility bills, all of your credit card statements are in your email, and you think you're going to find when you need it, you are smoking something.
Right.
It's just, so what do you recommend that people do as far as making sure that these documents are searchable and findable on their computers when you need them?
Right. So what you said just now is exactly right. A lot of us use our email as a filing cabinet, and even worse, we use our email inbox as a filing cabinet.
Oh, yes. Oh, but they don't even bother moving it into a folder. It's just there, yes.
And that often leads to disaster. So what I do recommend people do is create an easy-to-use filing system on their computer that makes sense to them. And what a lot of people will try to do is they're worried about being able to find things, so they will create these huge nested hierarchical folder structures on their computer. And what I find is that tends to take too much time to figure out where you want to save it.
To navigate through the save.
Yeah, and then once you're looking for it, take too much time to navigate through. So what I usually recommend is having kind of a shallow hierarchical folder structure with just some top-level folders. And then when you're saving your files, name them using a kind of consistent naming convention so that you're able to find it later.
Okay, so let's save. So an example would be, so you're not recommending using any, putting it into any software that organizes it. You're recommending as the bill comes in, right-click on the attachment and go save as, put it in a folder. Now, do you recommend that being date-based? Should it be just by the month or by the topic?
Right. So there's no right or wrong answer there. As far as software versus file folders,
yes.
Some people love having everything in a piece of software like Evernote, which I use Evernote.
Yes.
Not for my document storage, but for everything else.
Yeah.
And there's lots of other good software as well. I tend to be biased towards keeping my, what I think of as my filing cabinet, the documents I want to keep long term. I'm biased towards having those in some system that isn't tied to a proprietary system.
Yes.
So I personally prefer having them.
Just saving them as PDF.
Yeah.
But so you don't leave the name that BC Hydro sends the
right.
bill in. So you save it as Hydro bill January 2012?
Yeah. So very good point. I always recommend putting a date in the file name. Now, I personally put the date at the beginning of the file name. So
okay.
It would be, 2012-08. bchydro.pdf or something like that.
Okay.
Because I like doing it that way because then when you're looking at a list of files in a folder, they're just naturally sorted by date.
Naturally by date.
Some people prefer doing the, BC Hydro at the beginning so that things are sorted that way. It's really up to you.
And do you find most people that just going by the calendar, having January, February, March is the best way?
Yeah, that's the way most people do it. What I do is kind of a hybrid. So I have my folder structure by categories. So I will have a bills folder. I will have a statements folder. I'll have an insurance folder.
Okay.
And then in there, I will have my file names date-based.
Okay.
But what I try not to do too much is I try not to go... using bills as an example, what I personally don't do is I don't have like a BC Hydro folder and a Shaw folder. And,
yeah, that would be too much.
For some people, it just gives them that comfort, so that's fine. But the search on our computers, both Mac and Windows, is so good now that really, as long as you have that consistent naming convention and your PDFs are searchable, you'll be able to find what you need.
So naming convention is the first thing that you need to do in organizing for a paperless office.
Yeah,
it's building a little bit of a file structure. And that can just be as simple as a single folder that says 2012 statements, 2012 mm-hmm. bills, 2012
yeah.
insurance. Or it can be, you can nest it down by the month.
Sure.
But you probably, having listening to you right now, I don't even think you need a second level folder. I think they just save it all in the main folder.
Yeah, I don't. It depends how you work with and how you need to access
yeah.
stuff. Yeah.
Okay, so that's number one, is making sure that all of the stuff which is in digital form already is stored and we can find.
Right.
Now, let's talk about number two,
yes.
which is all those paper ones that still come
yeah.
in. How do we get those off our desk?
Right. So the first thing you want to do is look at how you're going to capture this information. And when we think about capturing and digitizing, we all think it right away of scanners, of course.
Yes, we do.
And that's obviously an important point. But nowadays, our smartphones, the cameras on our smartphones and the apps are getting so good that our smartphones are actually becoming pretty good scanners as well.
Yes.
Now, you wouldn't want to sit there and scan a 50-page document using your phone. Or at least I wouldn't.
Yeah. You do feel kind of mission impossible. Either.
Yeah, yeah. But it's great for these one-off capture situations. If you can use your phone to just capture a simple document
yep.
rather than letting it sit there and pile up, that you've beaten half
now,
the battle there.
When I talk to people about using their phones for that sort of thing, mm-hmm. I typically direct them to Evernote, actually,
yep.
is the thing. And it's for doing things like a receipt at dinner,
yes.
To capture your receipt. It's taking a picture of that,
yep.
then saving it into your accounting folder on Evernote.
For
I think
sure.
that is a great way of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's going to come down to naming, isn't it? It's really stopping and thinking about
yes.
the naming convention that's important
yes.
for that.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, and making it searchable, which Evernote does, so that's a big thing. But yeah, you want to have a decent naming convention so that you can find this stuff later.
Okay, so for the small little things like dinner receipts and stuff like that, just your smartphone is a good solution. But we aren't going to get away without having a scanner in the
solution. Absolutely.
So what do we do about those paper bills that still come in, those documents that we want to scan in?
So a lot of us have these all-in-one scanners, or all-in-one printer scanner things. And
flatbed scanners.
And of course, they'll work. They'll capture the documents.
They suck.
But I wasn't going to go quite that harsh, but okay.
You're flipping it open and sticking it on it. It just sucks.
Yes. So what will happen if people try to do that is they're going to get frustrated for exactly what you just said. You're going to try, and it's going to be annoying, and you're going to let the paper pile up again. Mm-hmm. So I really recommend picking up some sort of document scanner. And it depends on budget, of course, and your paper needs. That you can go anywhere from a scanner, a small scanner like the Doxy, where you can just feed it in, mm-hmm. and it will do a sheet at a time. Or you can go with these larger scanners like the Neat scanners or the Fujitsu ScanSnap scanners that have a document feeder.
So you can drop your document.
Yeah, you just drop a stack in the scanner, hit the button, and it will do it double-sided.
And those tend to work better for regularly shaped
items. Yes, yeah. Yeah.
Now, I've played with a couple of them, and I'm struggling with figuring out which one I like better, and because they seem so similar. I've got a Neat scanner and I've got a Doxy.
Yep.
Now they've got a few different features. The Doxy is completely wireless, I think, so I can just scan
Doxy
a whole bunch
go,
of things
that's
in,
right, yeah.
and then I just plug it in, and then it downloads everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it downloads it into the Doxy software.
Right.
That's obviously not the way we want it. We want to be able to move those into our other folders, right? So how do we do that?
Right. So the Doxy specifically, you're right. What you do is you plug it in and it goes into the Doxy folder. And then from there, you can save it out of the Doxy software as a searchable PDF. So mm-hmm. you can get where you want to go using the Doxy. But if you have a larger volume of paper, you're probably going to want to go with something a bit higher powered, like the Neat mm-hmm. scanner that you have, or the ScanSnap scanner, where these things can just kick out PDFs into some sort of inbox, and then you can process them from there.
And then you sort them from there.
Yes.
And so they're just, the ones that they create automatically, they are scanning them in, and they're just numbering them on their convention. So you're getting something that says like Neat Scan 01, Neat Scan 02, Neat Scan 03.
Yeah, or date stamped or whatever.
Yeah, know. And so you're going to have to go in and rename them and then move them around. So it's a hands-on process. Organize them. There's no software that goes in and looks at it and says, that's a hydro bill. I'm going to put it over here for you.
Well, it's funny that you say that. On Windows, I've been banging my head against the wall trying to find one and haven't been able to. So if one of your listeners knows, please let me know. On the Mac, there is an absolutely magical app called Hazel.
Hazel?
So I don't know if you're familiar with Hazel.
No.
So Hazel can do a lot.
But I'm writing down as we speak. Okay, Hazel.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So basically what Hazel will do is, at a high level, what it allows you to do is give it a folder,
mm-hmm.
and then you create rules on this folder, and it will take action based on your rules.
Okay.
So there is a million things you can do with it, but zeroing in on what we're specifically talking about, it can take action on files based on the text content of, in our case, PDFs. So for example, using your BC Hydro example is a perfect example. I download my BC Hydro bill from ePost every month.
Mm-hmm.
Hazel watches for the text that I've told it to look for inside this PDF, and it automatically names it, date stamps it, and moves it to my bill folder, so I never need to look at it again.
Shut up.
So.
How much does Hazel cost? I'm looking at it right here.
$24.95, I believe.
$25. And so it does it with all documents. So you can set it up so all documents, as soon as they scan or as soon as you put it in this folder, it then takes the action on it. So it's like an email filter almost.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Yeah, you tell it. In my case, I have, and this is why I scan everything and I save everything to one folder on my computer. I call it inbox.
Mm-hmm.
You can call it whatever you want. And Hazel's always watching my inbox folder. And then is anything that meets the rules that I've given it, it takes action automatically.
So it OCRs the PDF to capture the information. So if it sees a Bank of Montreal statement, it puts it over to the statements. If it sees
a
MasterCard, it moves it into the MasterCard area. It looks for those things. That is so cool.
It's a really great application.
You know what? I need you more. We have to take a break, but can you stick around for a little bit more?
Please do, yeah.
Good. We're going to stick around. We have Brooks Duncan on. We're talking about paperless offices, paperless lives, and maybe we are actually getting there. I'm Steve Dotto, and you are tuned in to Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Brooks Duncan is sitting in with me. He has the website documentsnap.com. He helps people become paperless with their small office, with their personal lives. And we've just been talking scanners and tools, and you've given me a great idea. So Hazel is the software that we're looking for. It's on Mac only for our Mac friends, and it's from a great name of the company, Noodlesoft.
That's right.
I like the name of the company, Noodlesoft. But it basically watches your folder and helps you organize things. So that's a big step towards the automation process, because the whole thing about going paperless is it has to be more efficient. It can't be less efficient. And it's pretty simple to take a bill and drop it in a manila folder and then put it in the filing cabinet. I mean, that's what we're competing with. But then it's finding things later.
Exactly.
It's totaling. Now, what about some of the I know that Neat has its own management system where they want to manage all of your paper.
Yep.
And I'm just trying to think. There was a company that had, oh, good heavens, I remember there was a really elaborate document management system on the Mac especially, but it was both Mac and Windows, that used to ship with the scanners. I'm just trying to remember which ones it used to come
Paperport,
with.
Paperport, maybe?
Paperport, that's right. What's happened to those guys?
They're still around. They have their users. Their users are getting a little crankier over time as the
because Visioneer was the company. Now it's coming back to me, and they were the first to really have this kind of document management system, and it was pretty good at the time.
Yeah, it's still around.
But it wasn't fast. I remember it was slow. Is that still an issue with it?
Pretty much,
okay, so it's not really contented. Now, what about the native Neat system? Because Neat is the one that's really pushing hard these days.
Yeah, Neat. Just before coming here, I saw a TV ad for them. So,
a TV ad.
They're advertising a lot. Neat's a good system, and where Neat they really shine is receipt management. So what they will do is when you scan a receipt, it will allow you to extract the information out, like the vendor and the amount and the tax, and then export it to Quicken or QuickBooks or, you know, do an expense report or something like that.
That's pretty good.
So, for people who deal with a lot of receipts.
So for salespeople that have got a lot of receipts, like, are we talking expense type receipts or are we talking about business receipts more?
Either. Okay. It works for either. And that's, there aren't a lot of options for receipt management, and that's one of the big ones.
And does it do a good job? Because I've played with the Neat software, for instance, I'm thinking it's probably the same technology that they should be using for business card scanning. So I scan it through. And to be honest, its accuracy is only good. It's not great.
Right. Neat, it has its fans and its detractors. It's kind of all over the map. I think for people who, for whatever reason, it works well, they love the system. But for a lot of people, whatever reason, it just doesn't read their receipts that well.
Because 80% or 90% reliability is not good.
Yeah,
for
the reviews
game.
Are kind of all over the map on that one. But if that's the function that you need, it's one of the only games in town. Yeah,
but it's one of the only games built into the scanner. We are starting to see Web 2.0 services that service us in this area. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of Expensify, and I think Expensit is another one. There's a variety of different online services. How much do you have much background with that stuff?
Yeah, I'm actually an Expensify user.
Okay.
Whenever I travel, I do exactly that. I find it really helpful to capture as soon as possible. So when I'm traveling, I'll just use my smartphone and I'll take a picture of the receipt with the Expensify app, and it uploads it to their servers, and they do quite a good job, actually.
So let's walk through how that works, because I think they've got a very interesting business model. I'm kind of fascinated to see what their future is going to look like. So Expensify, correct me if I'm wrong, you are out, you take a cab, you write down $35 in the cab chit, you take a picture of it in your hotel room with the Expensify app, and they call it. Smart scanning, and then printing it or something. Yeah, they ask you to print it, but printing it is not actually printed out, but it sends it into their servers.
Yeah, yeah.
Now their servers, I don't think that there's people. I think it's all done.
I believe it's OCR. Yeah,
yeah, it's all OCR. Yeah. So they OCR it, and then they send you back a report, which is just basically a spreadsheet with all of the different things broken out. Correct.
That's right. Yeah, you can. So what it'll do is you will then have your itemized receipt. They'll extract the information out of it, and it's very good. So they could be using Mechanical Turk or something like that to have a person look it over. I'm not really sure about that. But then, you can bring it into an expense form. And I don't have anyone to submit my expenses to. So I don't use the expense management part of it, but I find it handy to download a PDF with everything itemized and copies of all my receipts.
So you've got them there, which is anybody who does a lot of expenses know that this is a huge time saver.
Yeah.
Now, their pricing model is what I find fascinating.
Yeah,
it's free.
It's free.
For us.
Yeah. You get a certain number of scans per month, and then above that, I think it's
$5 per user.
Something like that, yeah.
But the real thing is, I mean, I don't think anybody really goes over the number of scans per month. Probably never have, I certainly never have. But what I find fascinating is they then take it, if you are a company, is one of the things that you pay for the premium service for, and it's by the person, is they will take it and they will format it for your own expense reports.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if you work for a large company, they'll format all the stuff for that expense report, which is customizing it, which saves your salesmen or your managers awful lot of time.
I've done the dance where you have to tape your receipts to a piece of paper and scan them, and it's a disaster. So yeah, the services like this are great.
And here's the other reason I really like Expensify. I use it attached to, because they give you the images of the receipts as well, which is crucial. And for me, I only submit to really one or two people as far as receipts go, but my speaking engagements, I always have to scan in, you know, cab fare and hotels and stuff like that. And I find it to be a total pain in the tuchus to do it on the flatbed scanner, which is why I like having these new sheet fed scanners. Mm-hmm. But the past, you'd be trying to organize all these folded up receipts that are laid down in your flatbed scanner. Now you don't have to worry about them. If you're doing them as you go, then you just get back to the office, and it's not even like an hour's worth of work or half an hour's worth of work to pull together all the expenses. You just print off the report from that time frame. It's got all the images attached. You do a mental checklist to make sure that they're all there, and then you can fire it off.
Exactly.
To me is a big step towards the paperless office. Fujitsu is the people who do the snap scan.
That's right. Scan
and
snap,
so scan snap.
Yeah. So, everyone does it.
There used to be snap scan. There used to be a product called snap scan. I'm trying to think what it was. Who was there? I've been in the industry too long. But are they if you're advising people of one particular device to buy, is that the one that you like the best?
That tends to be the one I like the best. It's very fast. It's very easy to use. It's very reliable. If you look at reviews online, it's 1,000 1,000 reviews, average 5-star, 4.5. So
people love it. And it's a little bit less expensive than the Neat too, because the Neat carries a fairly expensive price tag, doesn't it?
There's different models of the ScanSnap. The highest model they just released a few days ago, called the iX500. The list price is $495 US. So I think that's about the same as the Neat, I believe.
Yeah, that's.
And then there's a smaller model called the S1300i. That's about $280. And then a small mobile, about the same size as the Doxy, for $200.
Yeah, $200. I think that's the price range. I think anything over $200, I think people are going to have trouble spending.
Yeah.
You know, I just have a sense. At least until they're comfortable with it. But now on your website, you give give tips about it, answer questions. Do you blog about this stuff at all?
Yeah, I have a regular blog. I do weekly video tips. I do webinars like the Hazel we were just talking about. I just did a Hazel webinar that people can check out, all about how to use Hazel to process your documents. So
I might even check that out. It's documentsnap.com.
Yep.
My guest is Brooks Duncan. I have to thank you very much for your time. Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks so much.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
With the explosion of blogging online, everybody and their dog is now a writer. I certainly am a writer. I try to be a writer anyway. But one thing I realize is I'm not always a very good writer. I could use a lot of help writing. So I have found a writing coach, somebody who helps people write, not just for books, but for online and other areas as well. And now this writing coach is in Mexico right now. She runs the Vancouver School of Writing from Mexico. Catherine Lake joins me. Catherine, the Vancouver School of Writing, but you do it in Mexico.
That is true. We have a writing retreat here, and I start to work online as soon as it gets miserable and awful in Canada, in Vancouver specifically.
So let's talk a little bit about what a writing coach does.
Okay. Well, essentially, when people start talking about, I don't like writing, et cetera, I'm not good at it, or that's, there's generally, they're coming up with their own blocks. And some of them say, hey, I've got this idea, but I can't write, or I don't want to write, or I'm not good at it, or I procrastinate on it. So they talk about a ghostwriter, and I explain to them, okay, ghostwriter is going to be expensive. Mm-hmm. And it's also, you're going to spend a lot of time communicating to them what you already know. So it's better to get rid of these blocks and actually learn how to write and get excited about writing and have somebody who keeps you on track in your writing and learn what I call the writing process. So once you've got a process, and I'm particularly specialized in long form, so books, mm-hmm. Then you can do it again and again and again yourself. And that is what I do as a writing coach.
Now, has the access to self-publishing with the online world, with online book publishing, ebooks, as well as the different online services, has that increased the number of people that are interested in writing?
Oh my God, yes. And well, they should. It's a revolution out there. And people should jump on the bandwagon now, because it's starting to get, you know, more people know about it and realize how easy it is and how fast it is and how they can make money on it. They learn the ins and outs of it. So that's, as a writing coach, I don't just do writing. I do writing and publishing, mm-hmm. e-publishing. So they don't have to try to understand it all. They have somebody there for guidance of the whole thing. That doesn't mean that I go and do everything, although I will do it for them or find somebody to do it for them if they really want that too. But of course, I'm trying to say, hey, you're going to want to keep the margins yourself. So, you know, try and learn these things yourself.
The more you do yourself. Let me ask you, as the rules for writing for length of book, for example, has that changed because of the online form?
Yes, it has. And when I do my seminars, which are, I do repeated seminars, writing and publishing your ebook in 21 days, frequently, I ask people, how many people have read a book online in an e-reader or on their phone or whatever, and have no idea how many pages that would be in a regular book? And everybody puts up who's read online, puts up their hands, because you don't understand, and people don't care how long a book is. There used to be, like, you know, you have to do 60,000 words minimum, etc., or and so many, you know, 300 pages or whatever it is. They have this idea how long it, now we don't really care. We care about the quality rather than the quantity. And that's partly our lifestyle, because we're moving a lot faster. We want the information and the good information rather than caring about how long it is. And partly that's old traditional values of having bindings on books, and they must be at a specific thing in order to have a good binding on it. So we're changing that completely.
Now, does the audience change as well as a result? In other words, you might not have thought of writing a small book for 500 people in a special industry before, or with a group, you know, a book that sold 500 copies wouldn't be a success. But if it's to the group that you want to reach in an online form, the size of the audience and what success looks like probably changes as well.
You're absolutely right. So part of what I do also as a writing coach is almost a business coach. We decide what their goals are and get it down to what that specific audience is and what they want out of this book. And so you're creating your own success. So it may not matter how many people you can get it to. On the other hand, people would say, you know, I want to get it to as many people as possible. And there's a lot of ways to do that online that they hadn't thought of, or opening their market up to more than one market as well. So it works both ways. You can get a wide audience or a very specific audience.
Are you finding that it's not just obviously the business audience, but we're growing into a lot of other areas? And I'm thinking specifically of another guest on our show today is from Ancestry.ca. And I was thinking people taking and writing the history of their family into a book format.
Memoirs.
Yeah.
Huge. Yeah, that's huge. People tend to really, really like reading memoirs too, if they've got a particular interesting slant to them, you know, that a very unique story. And there's a lot of unique stories out there, but people don't know how to tell them in a way. So my background, actually, I come from a playwriting background. So one of the things I help them with is dialogue and things that they to make it more interesting, and things that they also kind of bridge that into the fiction world, even though it's memoir. I was at a reading once where somebody was doing a memoir. Beautiful. Everybody loved it. And I could tell by the way she'd particular scene that was when she was like three or something. And I said, look, I have to ask you in front of all of these other people who are beginning writers, many of them, I said, do you remember everything in that scene? Did you remember all that stuff? Or did you make some of it up? And she goes, oh, no, I made some of it up.
Of course, yeah, you'd have to.
You know, because, of course, you can't at 3 years old remember stuff, but it made it more interesting. So that's what we do also. I also do as a writing coach, I say, okay, you know, nobody's going to verify some little details, you know, and I'm not talking about changing things that are going to be able to trace and ethically wrong to change, or changing a real history or whatever. I'm talking about just details to embellish and make it a good story. Or what I tell people often is the facts don't necessarily make too many facts make don't necessarily make a good story, or
a little creative license adds some color.
Yeah, nobody loves a great storyteller. Because they were accurate. Mm-hmm. No, that's not why.
It's about the message. It's about the message. Now, let's talk about the technology for a moment, because do people just, you know, obviously we're all writing on a computer now, as opposed, or I think most people are going to be writing on a computer as opposed to longhand or on a typewriter. Mm-hmm. But is it just as simple as just starting a Word document and pounding away, or are there some other tools that writers are using really effectively?
Well, you know, there are some out there that people like, and some people love them and some people don't. And, you know, there is some people I've told like Scrivener. I particularly don't like it particularly. And I know other people, professional writers, just don't bother with the how-to-write software particularly.
Yeah. For listeners that don't know, Scrivener is a word processor that was designed in England, and it was designed as script writing software. So it works based on creating different elements that are almost like index cards that you can move around. So that can be a bit of dialogue, it can be a character, it can be a scene, it can be a chapter, and all of these different elements are just like you had a series of index cards. So you can fill in where you have an idea, and then reorganize it, and it automatically reformats. And I think one of the reasons people like that sort of a tool is if you do experience a bit of writer's block or you're kind of stuck, you don't have this big linear document ahead of you. You can just start on a little place that you can actually make some progress. It allows you to keep moving the whole process forward.
Yeah, it's doing visually what we've kind of visual organization that people have been doing in writing for years. They just haven't done it electronically. So it gives you an electronic version of that. But because most people have Word, I start with Word and show them how to use that effectively so that they can actually write more efficiently, find where they need to go back to, can at a glance look at what needs to be done and that sort of thing. So I do give them a good process and to use that. And like I said, everybody's got Word, so we start with Word.
Now, if you do have a story you want to tell, if you do want to become a writer, or you're a fledgling writer, or you think it might be in you, one of the things that's tradition of writers is cloistering yourselves away, going off somewhere where you don't have the distractions of day-to-day life and working on your project. And I guess that's kind of the basis of your retreat that you have.
That's exactly it, yeah. For myself, on a long form, like I said, once again, a long form of any kind, whether it was a script or a book or whatever, I can get so much done on a day-to-day basis before I need to immerse myself in the world or the thoughts, the ideas, and the book and how it flows. And yeah, I need to get away from the email and everything else. And so that's why I provided it because I like to get away also. This area where people can come, but they also get classes in the morning. Mm-hmm. So you've got short, only 2 hours, you know, so we've got an ability to get all excited about writing, be with other writers, and then they go away and can do whatever they want all day long. And then they also can schedule with me one-on-one coaching so that I can coach them on their individual projects as well. And then we also gather in the evening and have a meal together and at various great restaurants we have here. There's always ones that become favorites. And we do little readings in, you know, fairly private areas, but we do readings too. So we have an also ability to share our writing. And I think that's a really important element that people, that's one of the blocks. People have a fear of sharing it. And so it's a very important step to actually learn to share it. And we create a really safe environment to do that. So you're getting feedback, but it's very facilitated through me to make sure nobody's damaged by this feedback. And we have certain things we all swear to do at the beginning. And so it's very gentle, but also it's still going to give you that kind of feedback you need. I find the writer is a lonely kind of business. And if I don't get feedback right away, so I actually do like doing speaking engagements and speeches and everything, so I can have an audience in front of me and get feedback right away. Because it's too lonely to do the writing and then put it all out there and wait for somebody to say something. Even in blogs, I love having comments and stuff like that, but I love the interaction. So this is a way to get some of that interaction as well.
So the retreats are called, you can be found at iwanttowriteabook.org, and they begin February 15th. That's the start date, and you have a 1 week or a 10-day version that people can attend. They cost about $500 to start for the retreat itself, and then your cost of living and flights and that are on top of it. But you've got some bargains and some deals that people can find at your site.
Absolutely, yes.
So if you are bitten by the writing bug and you think that getting away into a retreat might just be the ticket, well, the Vancouver School of Writing, ironically down in Mexico, might just be the place that you want to check it out. Catherine, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Steve, and I'd love to see you down there write your book sometime.
That is Catherine Lake.
In terms of shows flying by, Art, this show flew by.
Like nothing. Like it never happened.
It's almost like it never. It's like it's an Art Factora meal these days. It's just vapor. So you're in week one of your cleanse.
Yes.
So are you going to give us reports over the next couple of weeks?
If you want to hear them.
We do. So what's your starting weight?
I don't want to say.
Okay. Well, now we're going to have no frame of context. We're going to have to take your word for it.
240.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Tub of goo.
I am. Thanks. Wow. I told you. 2 years of unhealthy
You
living.
Carry it so well, Art.
Well,
you really do.
It's the baggy shirts.
I would have put you no more than 238.
Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah. Well, those extra 2 pounds, probably hair product. That's what those 2 pounds are. That's what you can see.
I think next week we're going to do an App Wednesday. What do you say?
Oh, I like it.
Good. App Wednesday next week. And that's all the time we have for this week's show. My thanks to my guests. My thanks to Art Factora, who in his weakened state was still stellar. I am Steve Dotto, and we will see you next time right here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.